Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. Hi, hello, welcome back to the podcast. I just want to say that I hope you're happy. I hope you're enjoying this life. I hope you're enjoying the time that we get to spend in this phase of the world. So I'm living in it. I am here and I don't know if I would say that I'm enjoying it, but I'm happy to be alive. Let's put it that way. I hope you are too. The Butterfly Revolution by Curtis Yarvin is the focus of today's episode. A few weeks ago, we spoke about the techno bro, sort of the end of the American experiment was the name of that episode. And we walked through this fact that techno billionaires now essentially run the country, right? And we talked about who those techno billionaires are. The ones that I've listed here are not only ones. We talked about Elon Musk, Peter Thiel, Curtis Yarvin, Balaji, Andreessen Armstrong, and others. We talked about their end game, which is to essentially sway Collapse in their favor. They know what's happening to the system, and they believe that they are in control, or that they can be in control due to their wealth and influence. What is their end game? Well, it's a corporate autocracy. It's a dystopia. In their minds, it is something beautiful and great, because maybe for them it will be, right? They want a world in which they can do anything that they want without anyone telling them yes or no. And they don't want to have to deal with people choosing what they want. They will choose for us, and we will either live with it or we will leave. Lastly, we talked about Trump as a tool in multiple ways. Trump essentially is the bull in the china shop. He is a short-term solution to a long-term problem. Trump is the one that they can use his narcissism and his greed, and quite frankly, his success at populism to dismantle democracy and get us from A to B. So that was what we talked about in that episode. If you did not listen to it, go back and listen to it, please. And by the way, real quick, a pitch for the podcast. Collapse is an evergreen topic, right? The current situation in our collapse world is always changing. And so some of these more recent episodes reflect that as we talk about current events. But that said, go back and listen through episode 1. Be sure to listen to the first 8 episodes if you have not listened to those yet. And from there, continue listening. You can pick and choose different topics that are of interest to you. But those are relatively evergreen topics that discuss the behind the scenes when it comes to society, when it comes to why we are destined to collapse inevitably. Everything that we're talking about today could be solved when it comes to, you know, the dark enlightenment and Curtis Yarvin and all this could go away. We're still going to collapse. Society will collapse due to everything else that we talk about in the podcast. So, yes, if you don't have that background, I highly recommend going through and listening to those episodes. All right, so the focus today is on Curtis Yarvin. You may remember this slide if you watched this on YouTube from that episode. It kind of shows that, you know, it's a chart with Curtis Yarvin in the center, and then we've got all these billionaires revolving around him, orbiting around him. He is not a billionaire himself, but he keeps these people. He's captured their attention, and they use him for philosophical, you know, ideology building. Kind of fascinating. And so we'll get into a little bit of that. First, a quick note on Curtis Yarvin. I mentioned he's not a billionaire. He's just a wacky enough guy to have fleshed out a whole vision of the future, how to make that future happen, what that future will look like. And he's skilled enough at writing to get the attention of those people and to get into the right circles. There's nothing special about Curtis Yarvin, really. He looks and acts like the kind of guy that like would LARP, you know, neckbeard stuff in his mom's basement. And yet he has put together this idea, this plan, and somehow gotten himself in front of people who are influential and who can actually carry it out. The purpose of this episode is not to do a full historical bio of Curtis Yarvin. If you do want to learn more about him, you know, where he, how he grew up, what could have influenced him to be this way, all of that type of stuff, go to Robert Evans' podcast called Behind the Bastards. He has a two-part series that was recorded back in, I think, September or October-ish. He recorded it with Ed Helm. Ed Helm is, he's a movie star, right? He was from The Office. He's hilarious. And yeah, they're really well done episodes. Robert Evans does a ton of great research. So highly recommend checking that out if you want to learn more about Curtis Yarvin, the man and the boy. Lastly, Curtis Yarvin is thought of as a thought leader, sort of a philosopher. He has been stated that he is Peter Thiel's in-house philosopher. I don't know what that means exactly. I don't believe that Peter Thiel has ever funded Curtis Yarvin as far as we know in any way. And really, Curtis Yarvin kind of stays aloof from billionaires in the, you know, he's never worked for any of them directly, I don't believe. He's never been paid money, funded from them in any way. He gets his attention from them. And I know he makes money from his Substack that we're about to talk about. But Curtis Yarvin is, I mean, he's a software developer. And so this is more, I guess, a side hobby that has become rather successful. He has coined some terms. He's also popularized some other terms. So if you've heard of the cathedral, this is a term within the neo-reactionary movement. It's essentially equivalent to like the deep state. He coined this term back in the early 2000s, and it's used quite often in the neo-reactionary movement as saying like anyone who's in the media, anyone who's in government, bureaucracy, or whatever that is keeping neo-reactionaries, people like Curtis Yarvin and the techno-billionaires, from being able to carry out their plans the way that they want. The neo-reactionary movement itself, you know, he is one of like the main founders of this movement. If you're not familiar with the neo-reactionary movement, it's similar, but apart from like the alt-right movement, in that neo-reactionarianism, if I said that right, is mostly like an elitist or an intellectual approach, technology and accelerationism, that type of thing. Whereas the alt-right is the more populist side of the right-wing movement. You can be populist and be alt-right and still believe in having a functioning government, for example, whereas neo-reactionaries are specifically these guys that want to get rid of democracy, create an autocracy in which they can rule the world and do what they want. He also popularized the term red pilling. That you've probably heard of that before. It comes from The Matrix. It is used by right-wing folk to basically describe having woken up and opened your eyes to the reality of the world and the things that oppress them as men and why they are victim. Anyway, it's a hideous movement, but he kind of he popularized the term through his writing on his blogs. All right. So the main focus now is to discuss something he wrote called The Butterfly Effect. This was a blog post that he put on his blog in 2022. And it is essentially the A to B, right? B being this corporate autocracy that they want. He wrote a book called Patchwork, which describes this future that he's trying to create. And A being our current state, democracy, I guess. We kind of, you know, it's argued whether or not we're actually in a democracy, but people vote and they want to end that. So how do we go from democracy to corporate autocracy? Well, he wrote The Butterfly Effect to kind of describe that. He was writing this between the Trump terms. He was unhappy with how Trump's first term went. We're going to read some of the post here in a minute, and you'll kind of be able to see what I mean by that. And he just felt like Trump didn't have much power. And this post is written as a vision for a perfect Trump presidency. what would a Trump presidency look like if he took hold of the power and basically set up this new world for us? There are, I made a note here that we need to note the similarities and differences as we read it of how his presidency has actually gone. I know we're only, you know, at the time of recording this, we're only like 2 months into it, 6 weeks into it. But we can kind of look and see, based off of what he wrote in The Butterfly Effect and what Trump is doing, how does it line up and compare? All right, so bear with me here while we actually read through some of this post. I want you to be able to kind of get a feel for how Yarvin writes and word for word what he's described. This is a really long post, so I'm not going to read it all. I'm only going to read a small fraction of it. It was written April 7th, 2022, titled The Butterfly Revolution on his Substack, which is called Gray Mirror. This is a paid article. I did not pay for it. I've read summaries of it, and he also gives quite a bit here that you can read for free. I did not contribute to Curtis Yarvin, nor would I dream of doing that. All right, so his introduction is kind of talking about the current state of Trump in between his presidencies. And he says this, he says, "Let us imagine a fantasy world into which we could convert the Trump operation, as it is in early 2022, into a truly effective machine for both taking and using power." The next section he titles, "Why This Is Safe," and I think this is interesting. He says, "It is important to understand that this is not going to happen for one reason. Donald J. Trump is not the Trump in this story. He is who he is. His capacities are what they are. Therefore, this document is safe. Trump will never do anything like this. Whew! But I won't disguise my belief that someone should. Someone worthy of the task, of course." So I think he's doing a couple of things here, maybe a few things. So one, he's kind of calling Trump out, right? I like to think that he's saying to Trump here, like, you won't do this. You're too scared. There's no way you'll be the man that we need for the job. Kind of goading Trump into perhaps doing that. Number two, he's also kind of excusing himself if Trump doesn't do it, right? He can say, well, I told you guys Trump wasn't going to be the guy. He's too weak. So this is just an article saying what he should have done if we wanted to be successful. And number three, there might be a little bit of like plausible deniability here, like the ability to say, come on, guys, I'm just like, this is just theoretical. I'm just messing around. Trump's not actually going to do this. Calm down. Don't come at me. Though he does pretty explicitly say, I won't disguise my belief that someone should, someone worthy of the task, of course. So yeah, interesting. Then he goes into now an optimistic framing of one Trumpian future. Quote, "Trump did a great job. He made America great again. But his enemies have gotten stronger too. Well, America was always great. But now, starting in 2025, we're going to make America insanely great. And there's only one way you can do that. We've got to risk a full power start." This is a Star Trek reference. "A full reboot of the U.S. government. We can only do this by giving absolute sovereignty to a single organization, with roughly the powers that the Allied occupation authorities held in Japan and Germany in the fall of 1945. This level of centralized emergency power worked to refound a nation then for them, so it will work, or it should work now for us. What Trump is going to do is build this regime in exile or occupation authority as a private and needless to say peaceful institution, a larva. By winning a presidential election, he will then install it in office." So, side note here then, he's talking about in the 2 years before the presidency, running up to it, these are the things that Trump needs to do. He is basically building a larva, which can then flow or metamorphize into a beautiful butterfly when he wins in 2024. All right, continuing on, he says, "Metamorphosing into a beautiful butterfly, this larva will perform the feat that eluded Trump's first regime, turning office into power. As soon as it takes symbolic power, the butterfly will be ready, willing and able to take actual power, to actually make America great again. You have seen nothing. Nothing. Doing this will require powers in the presidency that have not been seen in the lives of those now living. It will be a kind of restoration of the historic office. It will, in fact, require the executive powers of Washington, Lincoln, and FDR, or even more. These three presidents, and to some extent a few more, were almost true CEOs of the executive branch. Their monarchical regimes then decayed into oligarchies, each of which was rebooted by the next monarchy. By the clock, we are about due for another. Trump in 2017 took office he took about 0.01% of power. If Trump in 2021 wants to have more than 0.001% of power, his enemies have gotten stronger too. The only way he can do it is to take 100%, to take it all at once, completely legally. Again, the real Donald J. Trump would never have the guts to even think of doing this, and he's just too old, so it's safe to use him as a picturesque example. Okay, the regime in internal exile. This is the last bit I'm going to read here. What we're going to do is turn the Trump entourage into a regime in internal exile. While in exile, this regime will be a larva, a harmless caterpillar. Once duly elected in office, it will not just caper in front of the cameras. In fact, it will not talk at all to the legacy press. It will spread its wings and become a beautiful governing butterfly. Trump himself will not be the brain of this butterfly. He will not be the CEO. He will be the chairman of the board. He will select the CEO, an experienced executive. This process, which obviously has to be televised, will be complete by his inauguration, at which the transition to the next regime will start immediately. Okay, right there, obviously, Elon Musk is Trump's CEO, right? Trump has brought in this person, who is in, by the way, this whole camp, and said, you're going to be the one to go through and make all these changes. You are essentially the decision maker. I'm just going to be here kind of in the background, right? It says here that he will be the chairman of the board, and the CEO is going to be the one to take all the actions and probably, in the end, take the fall for those actions as well. Okay, it says, for Trump, being president will be exactly like it was. All the photo ops and more, without any papers to sign, decisions to make, etc. The CEO he picks will run the executive branch without any interference from Congress or courts, probably also taking over state and local governments. Most existing important institutions, public and private, will be shut down and replaced with new and efficient systems. Trump will be monitoring the CEO's performance again on TV and can fire him if need be. And then lastly, he gives a quick overview. Well, he doesn't give a quick overview. I'm going to read it so that it's quick, just a portion of it. The strategy of the regime in internal exile is to legally construct an alternate regime in a country that abstractly recognizes the principle of popular sovereignty, that people have the right to replace the current regime with this alternate regime and can choose to do so in one step at one time. The caterpillar can live as long as it likes. It will only become a butterfly once. Three principles must characterize the alternate regime: unity, excellence, and energy. These character traits will be seen in both the larva and the adult. This is the most important thing you are voting for when you vote for the butterfly revolution: peace. No one steps on anyone's toes and no one kicks anyone. All right. So I know that was a lot of reading. Thank you for bearing with me. But I do feel like it was important to kind of get a sense for what he's writing about, what his vision is, how he writes, and all of that. Okay. So that said, you could kind of see there at the end that there was already some differences, right? He's talking about things like peace and how everything is going to be done completely legally. That has not been the case so far with Donald Trump. He has done so much that is illegal. I don't really know how Curtis Yarwood expected to be able to do all those things legally when we live in a country with a Supreme Court where the executive branch does not rule all legally. So I don't really know what he, you know, was he using legally, the word legally, like facetiously? Was he saying that it'll be legal because Trump will make it legal and choose for it to be legal? We have kind of moved in that direction, right? With the Supreme Court saying that the president has immunity and can do all these things. Trump has expanded the executive branch. He also talks about unity and peace, which is just something that we're not seeing, right? It is still a very harsh attack on the left. There's no unity or peace between the parties whatsoever. All right. This is a summary now of the process. It comes directly from Gil Duran. I talked about him in that last episode. Gil Duran, he's got a article that he wrote called Reboot Revealed, Elon Musk's CEO Dictator Playbook. I have stolen this content directly from Gil Duran himself, so I'm just putting that out there. I copied and pasted Gil Duran's summary of the process because he did such a good job with it. So credit goes to Gil, and go check out his content. So what he's done here is he's made 5 points about the rest of that article and the game plan that Yarvin put in place. And he's compared Yarvin's blueprint to the moves that Elon Musk is actually making as CEO. So we'll go through these one by one. Number one, install a CEO dictator. Yarvin's blueprint. Trump appoints a CEO to run the country like a private corporation, bypassing Congress and the courts. Musk's moves. Acts as federal CEO, demands unilateral control over sensitive government programs, positioning himself as an unelected decision maker as Trump stays in the background. So that one is almost, you know, like for like in how it's being carried out. Number two, purge the bureaucracy. Yarvin's plan, something called retire all government employees, RAGE, I guess. So he's been talking about RAGE for a long time, and it is this idea to fire career civil servants and replace them with loyalists. It is exactly what we've seen in Project 2025, which, by the way, 2025 got lots of inspiration from Yarvin as well, and you'll see the themes throughout that document showing up here as well. But yes, so Musk's moves, Doge is cutting teams, demanding mass resignations, locking employees out of offices, and threatening mass layoffs in federal government. Meanwhile, Doge is recruiting inexperienced young men who owe their loyalty to Musk and Thiel. And, you know, this was written by Gill weeks and weeks ago, right at the beginning of the election. And we have seen an escalation in the moves that Musk has made, right? He is threatening Social Security. He has listed 440 different like federal buildings for sale. It's just a complete gutting of everything that all the institutions that keep America running. Number three, build a loyalist army. Yarvin's blueprint, recruit an ideologically trained army to replace experts and enforce the new regime. Musk's moves, surrounding himself with young and experienced loyalists who enforce his will without question. Project 2025 will also provide Republican cadre to run what's left of the federal government. You may remember in Project 2025, they, for I don't know, a year or two now, at least, have been recruiting. There was a spot on their website where you could basically put in your credentials, who you were, state that you are loyal to Trump, and they built a massive list of people that they could choose from to replace all the people that they fired. Four, dismantle democratic institutions. Yarvin's blueprint, strip power from federal agencies, courts, and Congress, centralizing authority under the executive branch. Musk's moves, undermining the credibility of the federal government, downplaying legal oversight, and defying regulatory authorities, dismantling government agencies and functions with no plan for their replacement. So this part was really interesting because in Yarvin's article, he talks specifically about the importance of dismantling institutions and replacing them with something better or doing the job better and more efficient than it was being done prior. And I think that's one place in which this differs highly. Yarvin wanted it done and done well. He wanted to take a scalpel and carve out pieces and replace them with something that was cheaper and better and more loyal to Trump. But that is not what's happened here. I mean, we have the very visual representation of that with Elon standing up on a stage with a chainsaw saying, this is what I'm doing to the federal government. And it is. He's taking a chainsaw to it instead of a scalpel and just butchering it. There's no plans for replacing it. There's no plans for making it better. It is simply just gut everything and then claim that we're saving all sorts of money. The lies are just so obvious and apparent. The State of the Union address Donald Trump talked about, again, the lies of Social Security and, you know, the 150-year-olds that are getting Social Security payments in the millions. And it's been debunked. It's all been debunked so many times, but it doesn't matter. He can and will say, as will Elon Musk, whatever he feels the need to spread this sort of these lies and this populist movement, and his followers will just bend over backwards to defend him. Okay, number five, seize media and information control to maintain power. Yarvin's blueprint is to take over government, journalism, academia, and social media to control public narratives. Musk's moves, buying Twitter, firing journalists, boosting propaganda, and promoting fringe narratives while attacking traditional media, leading to the hostile tech takeover as Trump's CEO. And that has been very interesting to watch before Trump was elected, right? Elon Musk purchasing Twitter at the time, if you weren't paying attention to this side of things, felt like a power move. It felt like it was for the purposes of censorship and putting himself into Trump's good graces. But it seems that it was much more than that. It was actually an effort to completely dismantle the ability to have free speech and for him to be able to have control of that speech. We see other tech companies go more right-wing, right, in favor of the Trump presidency. We've seen that from Jeff Bezos. We've seen that from Meta and Mark Zuckerberg. They have essentially enveloped social media under their wing. And this is also true of TikTok, right? I mean, the very first, you know, was it the day of Trump's presidency that TikTok is sitting there, you know, sending out messages saying, Donald Trump saved us. Donald Trump saved TikTok. You have him to thank. So yeah, as far as social media goes, there's no doubt about that. Same thing with journalism and academia. With academia, they have made threats to shut down academic institutions who do not agree with Trump. Just recently, they made this threat that they would be pulling funding from any institution that allowed protesting, what he called illegal protesting on their campuses, students to be expelled. And then with journalism, we're seeing so much, but one thing I want to point out is that it's like journalism has rolled over and died. There's still some stuff out there that's highly critical of Donald Trump, but it seems like nothing is nowhere as honest as it should be. They have basically just given up and said, we know that if we try and fight, he will win. And so even, you know, CNN, he's threatened NPR with defunding and all these different things. And so I just, yeah, finding true news that will put things bluntly. I mean, just use Elon Musk's Nazi salute as an example. How many news organizations called that out for what it was? And how many used diminutive, you know, terms? Like, he used a sign that appeared to look something somewhat like another salute from earlier in the 20th century. It's just hideous. Just call it what it is. But in this case, Musk and Trump are winning in that battle. Okay. So what's next? We'll see a continuation of everything that you've seen in Project 2025, right? It's some absurd percentage of 2025 directives that have already taken place, and we're only a couple of months into this. It hasn't slowed down. So we can continue to see that active ignoring of the courts. Guess what? So far, he hasn't had to do much ignoring of the courts because they have basically allowed him to do everything. But they have threatened to do this. If the courts tell them that there's something that they cannot do, they will simply ignore it, and who is going to stop them? Once you ignore the courts, you have stripped them of power, right? You have shown that what they say doesn't matter. Donald Trump has recently said that the law basically rests in his and the Attorney General's hands. They get to decide what is law. Loss of constitutional rights, so we will continue to see as new executive orders, as new mandates, new threats come out. I just gave an example of one on campuses, you know, we will arrest you and defund the school if they allow for illegal protests, which what is an illegal protest, right? That is freedom of speech, but he will find a way to remove that. I see the potential for a loss of many other constitutional rights, including Second Amendment rights, at least for some people, because that Second Amendment threatens Trump as well. Okay, expansion of the executive branch. This one goes without saying. We've kind of talked about this the whole time. That's exactly what ignoring the courts does. That's exactly what deciding that he becomes the lawmaker does. He holds all the power, and Congress basically fades into the background, which it already really has. He's made choices around things like defunding Ukraine, the war effort in Ukraine, talking about attacking these different countries and you know, overtaking Gaza and building a new seaside resort there, whatever. He's doing all this, and he's going to do it all without Congress's approval, which is normally needed for any of these types of actions. And this will lead to, I think, two major issues. One of those is economic troubles. we're already seeing the warning signs. Just, you know, recently, this is kind of the number one discussion as he's rolled his tariffs out and actually implemented those. We are looking at what is most likely going to be a stagflationary situation, which has not been seen since the 70s. And, you know, I used to think, okay, a government who is in a certain situation can get us out of it in a reasonable amount of time using the levers and things that are in place. The Fed can figure it out. There's going to be economic hardships. But as long as, like, we don't have an actual shortage of resources or goods, like, we can handle a recession, we can handle some stagflation, even we can handle inflation. But we don't have a president who wants to handle those things, right? We have a technocratic billionaire class running the show who wants to see economic troubles. They need for things to crash so that they can buy things at discounts, right? They can buy up all our properties. It furthers the ability to institute neo-feudalism and all that. Anyway, I don't see us escaping some really terrible economic times ahead. And lastly, local and global violence. There's no doubt the isolationism, America turning its back on all of its allies, openly insulting other countries, does nothing but favor Russia and China, who are expansionist. And we ourselves have become expansionist through, you know, threats to Panama, to Greenland, to Gaza, to Mexico, to Canada, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, I think we're seeing the stage set for a whole new sort of world order and geopolitics, and it's going to lead to a lot of heartache and a lot of violence. Okay. I appreciate you being here. Keep a perspective on things. Like I said at the beginning, I hope that you're happy. I hope that life is good despite the hardships. Know that you have a friend in me. Feel free to reach out anytime. I am going to be starting a Discord channel. I'm hoping that it's actually up by the time this episode releases. So yeah, search Breaking Down Collapse in Discord. We'll have one for our patrons, those who join us on Patreon, and we'll have one for everybody. Patreon, as always, at the end of every episode, we talk about this. I just really appreciate the support. It's super helpful to me. It's always been a dream in the 4 years that I've done this podcast to one day be able to leave my job and do this full time. I'm not there. I'm not really even close, but the more support is so appreciated. I would love to be able to spend hours a day on content rather than the small amount of time that I have now to focus on it. All right. Thank you all. Have a great rest of your day. Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.